Katie's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Ronald Nichols. And you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right, you are. That's right. That's okay. Ron hasn't been on for a while. Should I call you on the air? Should I call you Ron or Ronald or
probably
Mr. Nichols?
Ron. Probably
Mr.
Ron.
Nichols.
Mr.
Sir.
Nichols is my dad.
This is the second time you've had a chance to be on the show, and I greatly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, no problem.
To come on. But yeah, before we talk a little bit about you and introduce you again to the audience, let's go through the paperwork. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and check us out. And you can listen to the various podcasts we have and the movie reviews and all that good stuff. You can go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we'll pop right up. Fat Guys Network will also work. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM, like us, and write some scintillating things on our wall, because that's how we get power to live. Then you can go to, or you can go to fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. We got an email question that we'll answer in the third segment. We also have a voicemail line, 740-205-6456. Again, still only getting creditors calling, so it'd be nice to get an actual listener from time to time. I when the creditors call, I'm like, do you listen to Fat Guys in the Movies? They're like, nope. I go, bleep, you're done. I'm not going to even talk about, you know, changing my credit card or talk about my credit rating or whether I want, you know, to help the Zaire Prince by giving him my bank account number unless he listens to Fat Guys in the Movies. So anyways, Sir Ronald Nichols, Sir Mr., tell us a little bit about yourself.
I own and run boxofficebuzz.com. It's a movie website, database website, indexes all trailers and clips for any movies, and it's pretty
and
much...
Is that two Zs?
That's with one Z. One Z.
One Z, people. Make sure you misspell, because that's what the internet's about.
Of course.
But yeah, it's basically movie news and trailers and all that good stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah. Essentially IMDb, but... we'll just say it's better.
Way, way cooler. And it has a cool little bee as the logo. Right?
Yes, it has a mascot bee that my friend keeps bugging me to get made into a bee holding his butt as a gun and shooting people.
Well, I mean, I guess my question to you is, why was that not the original concept?
I had to censor it when I first sent it to the website.
That's not what the internet's about. The internet is not about censorship. Don't we know that already? The internet is about saying whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want, and not apologizing for it. And
that
doing
is
it
true.
Under a completely anonymous name.
That is true. Find
so,
me if you can.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, never mind, never mind. Go ahead.
No, never mind, no. Because this one goes on the radio. This segment is on the radio. We'll talk more about the offensive stuff in segment three. What's new in your world? You were on back in, was it September or November? Do you remember what movies we talked about?
I don't remember what movies we talked about.
What good are you?
Now I'm trying to remember. I feel like a big trailer came out at a time. Cowboys and Aliens, I think we talked about.
No, well, it was probably then. If that's what it was when it came out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, I think it was when it came out on Blu-ray.
Because I'm pretty sure it was
trailer
well
we
after the
about.
Summer. That
what trailer was it? There was a big trailer that came out when we went on last. Mm.
Was it Abduction with Taylor Lautner? Was it...
You know what? I think it actually was Abduction.
Was it Abduction?
I think we ripped into Abduction pretty hard.
We may have talked about Abduction. See, now I have to look this up because I'm curious as to what we had talked about, because I'm just riffing because I don't know anything about the first movie that we're showing. Here's the thing. Let me just rant a little bit about sort of the way movies are. And hold on. I've got it. You know what? It was the week after Abduction came out. For some reason, I don't think there was any movie that came out the week that we actually talked. I don't have it written down. It was September 30th, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there wasn't that many big movies coming out that time.
Yeah, it was in the doldrums of the fall. And what's funny is we do, more this year than any other year I remember, there have been weeks where nothing has come out.
Yeah.
if you looked at like the week after Thanksgiving, you had three kids movies come out. Well, ostensibly kids movies. I'm lumping Hugo in on that. Yes. You had three kids movies coming out on Thanksgiving and nothing coming out the week after Thanksgiving.
This year has been a little bit weird because there's been a few weeks where I have wanted to go to the movies on the weekend. And then I look at the listings and there's no movies I want to see on there.
Yeah, there's no new stuff.
And it's very weird. I'm not used to having that happen.
Yeah. That's when it was. And it was the week after Abduction came out, because we talked about Abduction in the box office segment. So yes. You are correct.
We made fun of Abduction a lot.
Or as I refer to it, Abduction. But yeah, there's... We're sort of in the doldrums. Let me just rant about the way... So I'm just going to prepare everybody for the way things are. I pride myself on having a movie review show where we get a chance to see the movies ahead of time and review them on the show. And now I know sometimes because of the production schedules and the other schedules of the guest hosts, we aren't always able to see the movies before we record the show. And the show goes live on the internet, usually on Thursday nights, and it airs on KGAB in Cheyenne, Wyoming, in the weekend, some point on the weekend, various times or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to know, because when it doesn't, I don't want to know. I'd like to just think it's out there and it's being listened to by 5 million people, even though there's, I think, only like a couple million people in, I think it's what the state of Wyoming, I think is like, I think the actual population's less than 1 million.
Oh, geez.
Of the actual state. So, but you know, God bless you. You listen to this show, all 27 of the folks who care to tune in. But anyways, they haven't screened anything this week. They had This Means War. We'll talk a little bit about that later on. They didn't screen it. They had sneaks, but there was a complete cluster, you know what, for that screening schedule and that showing schedule. They have Ghost Rider, which specifically is not being screened for press, probably because it was just raked across the coals at Butnamathon in Austin earlier this year.
Oh, okay.
And then we have The Secret, and I will pronounce it wrong because I've been doing it all week. The Secret World of Arrietty. Did I say it right?
That is right. Yep.
Oh, that is right. Arrietty. The Secret World of Arrietty, which is a Studio Ghibli film. And they didn't screen it. They screened it in some markets. They screened it in Cincinnati, but I wasn't going to drive down there to see. That's about a 2-hour drive for me, and I would have had to leave at like 7 in the morning, so
yeah.
On a Saturday, so that wasn't going to happen. So yeah, they didn't screen anything. So here, let's just talk real quickly. Secret World of Arrietty is the latest film from Studio Ghibli. I know nothing about it, but here's a trailer to listen to.
My mother, father, and I are all borrowers. Promise you won't let our daughter get eaten or squashed like a bug. We borrow things like soap and cookies and sugar, things that humans don't miss if they're gone. We've been seen, and borrowers aren't supposed to be seen. Are we safe? I really don't think he intends to hurt us.
Once a borrower has been seen, the human's curiosity can't be stopped.
I'm going to say that this is probably going to be awesome, because pretty much anything from Studio Ghibli is pretty awesome. But I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really seen anything from them. The only thing I can really say is that their animation style is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to take my kids. But unfortunately, we didn't get an early screening, so we have to give it a preemptive suck.
Yeah.
We got to go to a break, and when we talk more movies... Two Fat Guys of the Movies. We were talking a little bit about The Secret of Arrietty, which we know nothing about because I don't prep for this show. And I didn't watch the trailer. So there, I'm excited to see it. I'm going to take my kids. I love Studio Ghibli. I am very interested in seeing it. Would have been nice to have seen it earlier. Anyways, let's move on to the next movie. And oh, like I said, Secret of Arrietty gets a preemptive suck. It has to, because I'm contractually obligated to, since they didn't screen it. But I'm sure it's going to be awesome. It's probably going to be probably the most awesome preemptive suck we've ever done, ever. But we'll talk about Ghibli later. Let's talk a little bit about Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. Nick Cage returns to vomit bullets and wee-wee fire as the demonic superhero from Marvel.
This child is in danger.
Daddy! I don't save people.
If you don't help, the devil could have a new form, one more powerful than he's ever known. And a shadow will fall upon the earth. Save the boy and lift your curse.
I've made a lot of mistakes. Danny's the one good thing I ever did.
That being the case, we better make sure he doesn't turn out to be the Antichrist.
All right. Now, I know you're a comic book guy.
Yeah.
Ron, were you a Ghost Rider fan? Did you read the books?
I never actually got into Ghost Rider. I always kind of saw it on the shelf, but I mean, it's a pretty out there superhero in a superhero world, so I never really got into that.
In a world where there are giant rock things and people transform into giant green
Ghost
things.
Ghost Rider's kind of out there. So,
I love the concept of saying, well, you know, even for superheroes, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
So you never read the books? Because this is the sense that I've gotten is that for people who just... let's take out all the stuffy people who don't like superhero movies. Mm-hmm. Or Nick Cage movies. Let's just leave them out of it. Because I talked to somebody once, and she was like, she's a critic in town who will remain nameless. For those of you on Twitter who want to know, just DM me. I'll tell you who it is. Like, you're going to know who it is. But she was like, oh, that was the worst movie ever. Worst movie ever made in the history of the universe kind of thing. And I'm like, it was Ghost Rider. For crying out loud. It's Nick Cage is a fiery skull, Johnny Blaze superhero motorcycle guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you like the first movie?
The funny thing is, the first one I didn't mind as much as people kind of complained about it. I actually found it decent for what it is. I mean, it's Nick Cage being Nick Cage, playing a guy that is on fire and rides motorcycle.
Turns into a flaming skull.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to give it a pass when it comes to certain aspects of the movie. The storyline's not going to be the best. The acting's going to be obviously over the top. So, I mean, for what it was, I actually enjoyed it.
He's gonna go full Cage.
Exactly.
In this.
And Cage is the best Cage.
I forgot where I actually picked up that term, and that's from Jeremy Kirk and Tim Buell from The Golden Briefcase. And it was only last week that somebody mentioned that I had they reminded me where that quote came from. And it's going full Cage. And what's funny is I remember we watched, because we live tweet movies, mm-hmm. on the weekends, we live tweeted Snake Eyes.
Oh, okay.
And Nick Cage, he starts full Cage. He doesn't go full Cage. He's out of the gate full Cage. He starts at 11 in Snake Eyes. Oh. He's such a, for as great of an actor as he is a terrible actor.
I think he has learned secretly that everybody loves crazy Nick Cage, and now he's just like, screw it, I'm only gonna be crazy Nick Cage for every movie I do now.
Well, and I mean, it's like now he knows.
Yeah.
Now he knows. And like, I remember I saw somebody on Twitter talking about, they did an, I think it was maybe Drew McWeeny, who said he was doing an interview with Nick Cage. I could be totally wrong, so I apologize if I got the source of this wrong. But he said he asked Nicolas Cage, because he was interviewing for Ghost Rider or something, and he asked him, you know, about just his over-the-top characters, and he's like, well, in Wicker Man, I punch out some, I'm wearing a bear suit as I'm, like, punching out Lily Sobieski. He's like, how could you not know that was going to be ridiculous?
I think he knows.
I don't think he always knew, though. I think if you go back to Snake Eyes, which was, like, mid-90s, I think he still thought I don't think he was in on the joke yet. It's sort of like William Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
He was not in on the joke when he was acting in Star Trek.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, the best.
No way.
Yeah, the best like example I think is the recent Saturday Night Live. You can definitely tell that he's now just embraced what people think of him now.
Well, I mean, even like the Saturday Night Live from like 15, 20 years ago when he did the guy, move out of your parents' basement. Get a job, people. But, you know, in the 60s, the mid-60s, William Shatner thought he was all that.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't until the 70s that he kind of realized, he kind of like realized he caught on.
Yeah. People are not laughing with me. They're laughing at me.
Yeah, and I think Nicolas Cage, it was doing enough Jerry Bruckheimer movies that in the late 90s, he caught on. He's like, oh, this is what people like.
Yeah,
okay, exactly. I'll have some fun with it. Yeah, so, and I think that's what he's doing here. I don't know. Again, they didn't screen this. We literally were told press was not allowed to go. They are screening it. They're doing a Thursday night screening, and what's funny is I'm a member of GoFobo, which is, for those who don't know, that's a online screening promotional thing.
Yeah, great website.
And you can go to gofobo.com, GOFOBO.com, and you can sign up and you'll get like alerts that there are screenings coming, and you can reserve passes to the screenings in your city. And I got this email and it's like, hey, you're invited to the Ghost Rider screening. And I'm like, okay. So I reserved a pass, and like, couple hours later, I think I'm the one who caused this. It may have been other people. And it probably showed up on the report at the publicist's office that all these press members were suddenly downloading these passes. And we got this email that said, yeah, you're not going to be allowed in. Which is stupid, because like 4 hours later, I'm going to go see it at a midnight show.
Yeah.
So just show it to us on Thursday. You're not like going to stop me from reviewing the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's not like this weird window of opportunity at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night that I can review the review the movie that I can't review the movie at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So. I don't know why they're not doing a screening. I feel like this movie is going to deliver exactly what you see in the trailers. There's a reason why.
It's going to be 2 hours of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor were brought on board for this film. They're over the top as Nick Cage's acting is, and it's going to mesh extremely well, I think.
I don't know. It may be overload, because already what's funny is when the first Ghost Rider came out, it was ridiculously popular.
Yeah.
And it was just like the Marvel fans that hated it. And it was the standard haters, you know, the kind of people who are like, you know, the people are like, Empire Strikes Back is the best movie ever, and I'm not going to watch the prequels again. You know, you're not, those people were the ones that hated it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those movies that after it's sunk in over the last 4 years, I think there's a lot of people that are like going, that was a bad movie. Why are you making a sequel?
There also seems to be a lot of people that are excited for this film.
Oh, really? I don't know. It's like, I'm not a big fan of Neveldine and Taylor. I respect the heck out of them as filmmakers, because I love their guerrilla style. I love the fact that they do things on a very limited budget. I love their run and gun style of shooting. I just don't think they're good filmmakers. I mean, Crank and Crank 2 were terrible. New Gamer was just insanely bad.
I think as storytellers, they're not well as. Their directing style is really, really good. It's when it comes to an overall complete film, I think, where you see their breakdown as directors.
They're like David Goyer. You know, they can make any. You take one couple shots from the movie, you take one scene or a couple shots, and it's going to look good.
Yeah.
But you try and string this together for 90 minutes, and it just becomes dumb.
Yeah.
And stupid. I think
that's a perfect example, like, perfect explanation for them.
So I don't know. I kind of have a feeling this is going to suck.
I'm hoping crazy Nick Cage head on fire.
Crossing your fingers. Oh, yeah. He's going to be at 11 from the beginning.
So from 11. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be a guilty pleasure. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. I'll be checking it out Thursday night at midnight, but it gets a preemptive suck for now. Next, we're going to move on as we lead you into the break, where you're going to give you the trailer for This Means War. Reese Witherspoon has to choose between Captain Kirk and Bane for her Valentine. Aww.
You're my best friend.
I trust you.
I know that you would take a bullet for me. I would for you as well.
What were you doing on the computer?
Yeah, I photographed my girl.
I was doing the same thing.
You want to see her?
Gun three.
One,
two,
three.
That's
Lauren
Scott.
I feel weird about dating two guys at once.
You know what? You date her.
Besides the fact, if I got in the picture, it wouldn't even be fair.
I'm sorry. What does that mean?
I think we should lay down some ground rules.
I think we should.
I don't think we should tell her that we know each other.
Let's stay out of each other's way.
Just let her decide.
May the best man win.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. If it sounds like we've lost our voice a little bit, that's because we spent a whole bunch of time during the break chatting about a whole bunch of things, which probably would have been fantastic for the show, but unfortunately, we're not putting it in there. Yeah. So anyways, we're going to go back to stuff that's not fantastic for the show, and that is talking a little bit about This Means War. I'm going to give you first crack at it because I've got a great story to go along with this. I did not see the movie, and it's about that. But okay. Give me your take on This Means War.
Okay, so, I mean, I really want This Means War to actually be a good film. And it's strictly because of Tom Hardy, to be honest. I want him to not be in a bad film, but
you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. I know, but he will be at some point,
but
even if it's not this,
I can't knowingly go into this film and think that it's going to be good. Cause I really do not think this film is going to be good. There'll be a few laugh out loud moments. I have a weird feeling that those laugh out loud moments are already in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not going to be much in between those. So I have a bad feeling about this film. I don't think it's going to be that good.
What's funny with This Means War, I have not heard a good thing about it from anybody on like Twitter or something. Now, granted, I follow a lot of film critics, and film critics in general are going to be predisposed to not like this movie anyways. It's not their thing. You know, it's sort of like a punchy, action-y rom-com is really what it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of critics are going to just not like it anyways. But usually, like, even, you know, and I use the example, I was talking to my wife about it, and I'll tell you the story behind that in a minute. But I was talking to my wife about it, and I mentioned that I haven't heard anything good about it. She's like, well, that's all the people you know that are film critics, and what the hell do they know? And, oh, by the way, you can swear in this segment. This is a little segment. So fuck on, you know. But anyway, so she's like, yeah, those are all critics. So what about me? Her meaning herself. You know, she loves these kind of movies. I said, well, this is the thing. When Bedtime Stories came out with Adam Sandler, I mean, in general, critics didn't like it. But they were just like, eh, it's just a crappy Adam Sandler movie. It was kind of how they responded. But when Jack and Jill came out, they're like, this is fucking terrible. And I said, that's kind of what it feels like. When it's just a light throwaway rom-com, normally you get people going, what do you expect? It was crap. You know, and that's usually what I see on my Twitter feed. But I'm seeing people going, this is the worst movie I've seen this year kind of thing. Now, they may be totally wrong. It could be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your hope for Bane is still in existence. But here's the thing. This is why I'm extremely cautious about this movie. They were originally having it scheduled to open on the 17th, which is, you know, well, probably the day most people are going to start listening to this show, you know, Friday the 17th. Most movies open on Friday. Then Fox got this brilliant idea to say, we're going to open it on Valentine's Day because we want to be like, oh, make love, not, you know, make love, make war, you know, kind of thing. This Means War. It's in the anti-Valentine's Day movie. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, because it has that love triangle in it.
Yeah.
And they sent out a press release. I heard all about it. Oh, it's opening this day. It's day. Please announce to your followers. Please announce on your websites. Blah, 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 blah. And so I know people who did that. And a little bit ago, then like a couple weeks later, they're like, oh, yeah, hey, guess what? We're just doing like sneaks on Valentine's Day. And it's going to open on the 17th. And I remember seeing that and going, well, that's odd. That's odd that they suddenly changed the release schedule. And this is before The Vow came out and just did $40 million. So I'm like, well, that's odd. Usually whenever they start changing that plan that close to the release date, it shows that they're not confident about the movie.
Yeah.
It's the best way I can describe it. So it comes out and it's on Valentine's Day, and I knew it's a kind of movie I thought my wife would love. And so I talked to her. I said, do you want to go see this? Because I can go see it on Tuesday and review it for the weekend, and that's one less movie I have to worry about seeing. She's like, yeah, let's go ahead and do that. So we got a babysitter. We made a date. I checked movie times online, and I go to the theater. We go to the theater. I said, I want tickets to this. And they're like, oh, is this a public thing? And I'm like, well, it's not a private thing. I know it's not a press thing because I would have gotten a press invite. And like, oh, well, we'll put up the sign. They didn't even have the sign up at the theater that I was seeing this at. And they put it up, and then I'm like, whoa, hold on a second. That's a 7:05, and it's like 5:30. And I'm like, there's supposed to be a 5:45 show. And he's like, no, there isn't. And I'm like, the website said so. Well, what website you go to? I said, movietickets.com. They're like, well, that's not the right place. So my wife starts looking online on her phone, and she finds that it's now the sneaks have all gone down to one showing at selected theaters on Valentine's Day night.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be like there were people saying you could see it at midnight, and there were people, theaters that were supposedly going to have midnight screenings, and they're going to have screenings throughout the day, and then it went to a one show. Now, according to the studio, they're saying it made over $1.5 million on Valentine's Day. Let's forget the fact that, like, The Vow made, like, $10 million on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Which I find kind of interesting in the sense that a movie that already had been out for 5 days, even though it had more screenings during the day,
mm-hmm.
crippled it. Because you'd think that the 7 or 8 o'clock show, you could pretty much pack every house that yeah. you have that in. But it shows that already people are way more interested in an old movie like The Vow than they are in This Means War. And I'm like, well, fuck this. I'm not going to review it. I'm not going to bust my... I've already busted my ass to see it. And obviously the studio is not interested in having... It's not interested in maximizing the amount of people seeing this movie, which means they're terrified of word of mouth.
Yeah.
Because they're like, you know, because it doesn't matter what the showings did. It matters what the showings are on Friday when it actually opens, because now people will be like, oh, I saw that on Tuesday. And like, oh, should I go see it? No, it's fucking terrible.
That's true. I mean, that it does show a bit of a lack of confidence in that your movie's going to do well when you're going to start moving things around and switching them so willy-nilly.
And when I emailed the publicist like beforehand, I'm like, hey, what are these showings? He's like, yeah, we're just getting, we're not getting any consistent information. So Fox didn't even know what the hell it was doing like a week beforehand.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, stick to it and go with it. But, you know, because they're like, oh, special engagements on Tuesday and then opening wide on Friday. I don't think the word of mouth is going to be that good on this movie. And it's directed by Mick G. So, well, there you go. I have four words to that. Charlie's Angels, Full Throttle.
I think I blacked that out because I completely forgot about that.
Oh my God, that was such a bad movie.
I honestly think it's not going to be a good movie. I don't think
it's going to play.
It's going to be bad.
Yeah, it's going to play very soft because usually whenever they open a movie, regardless of the film, whether it's Transformers or if it's something like this, if they open it midweek, it'll do well, but it never does very well on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I think that they're hoping to have a weekend bit. But, you know, Jesus Christ, The Vow made it. This is a good way to... Well, by the way, that would get This Means War gets a total on suck because it was impossible to see this movie the way it's been scheduled. And I could have gone and seen it with everybody else.
Yeah.
So, and then it's a good segue into the box office. You know, last weekend, The Vow made a obscene amount of money, $41 million.
Yeah. Oh, The Vow.
What the fuck?
I knew that was going to happen. I mean, my entire Facebook and Twitter wall was females like swooning over the fact that Channing Tatum is in a film and he has to fight to get the love of his wife back.
It's so bad. It's such a bad movie. It's so awful. And he is so bad. Oh, he looks good. But see, this is the thing. I'm the first one to sit there and be like, you know what? So-and-so actress is gorgeous. But if they're in a Rachel McAdams, beautiful woman.
Yeah.
She's in a shitty movie called The Vow.
I mean, females do tend to give him a pass. Like, I don't think any female can seriously sit down and look somebody in the eye and say he's a good actor because he's a terrible actor.
He cries in the movie and it's the funniest scene in the movie. He plays a guitar and then starts weeping. And I'm like, really? Holy shit. He's so bad. This movie is so awful. But yeah, it made tons and tons of money. It made $41 million.
It's
guess, you know, what? Throughout this week, it's still gonna make. It's gonna end up next weekend with $25 million.
Oh, 100%. This is where they succeeded. They knew their audience, and they 100% delivered to them.
Absolutely.
Like, they knew exactly what points to hit. They pretty much went, here's The Notebook. Let's make a film similar to that.
Except she's not old yet.
Yeah. And yeah, she, instead of forgetting later on in life, she forgets halfway through the movie. Done. Yeah. All right, let's do this.
Such a bad
and
movie.
Good for the studio, because they knew exactly what they were doing when they made that film.
Yeah. And then what's funny is the other reason I think it did so well is because it was up against three movies that pretty much went for the same type of demographic.
Yeah.
It was up against Safe House, Journey 2, and Star Wars Episode 1, which are like basically three dude action-y movies.
Yeah.
And the only thing that really separates them in terms of interest is their, in demographics, is their age range.
Yep.
Safe House skewed older, Journey 2 skewed younger, Star Wars Phantom Menace skewed a little more fanboy-y.
Yeah.
I said, well, my God, I sound like I'm like boy, no, boy e or boy ish.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, and The Vow is number one, Safe House is number two, and if you look at the demographics, it's going to be The Vow is relationship guys,
yeah,
and Safe House was guys with a bunch of their guy friends going to see Denzel Washington kick the crap out of Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, and Journey 2 and Star Wars were basically
we're three and four.
More kids and younger. And the thing is, a couple things. First of all, this is a notable weekend because it's the first time on a non-holiday weekend. It happened once in 2008 for when Benjamin Button was released over the Christmas weekend. But in a non-holiday weekend, or any weekend aside from that holiday, that four movies opened at $20 million or more.
Yeah.
Which is freaking enormous.
Yeah, that is unheard of.
And you know what that means? That means all four of them won. People like, and it's funny reading the box office report, because there's so much animosity towards Star Wars because fanboys are so fucking fickle.
Yeah.
and can't look past into reality. And they're like, oh, well, Star Wars, that didn't do well. It came in fourth, which is nothing like when the reissue of Star Wars in 1997 did well. I'm like, well, okay, first of all, do you know what the biggest movie up against Star Wars Special Edition was in 1999?
What film?
It was in only 1,500 theaters. And it was, oh shit, I can't even remember. Hold on, I'm going to look it up because no one will remember this. Oh, and here I am, making myself look completely smart. Okay,
I'm curious to know which film this is now.
I had it in my head and I completely lost it. Star Wars Special Edition opened up against, it was opened up against Jerry Maguire in its eighth week.
Oh, geez.
Scream in its seventh week, Evita in its sixth week, and then the other movies were Gridlocked, was the new movie, Gridlocked with apostrophe D, in 743 theaters, Shadow Conspiracy in 837 theaters.
I've never even heard of Shadow Conspiracy.
And Meet Wally Sparks was the next closest release in 1,500 theaters.
Yeah, so pretty much it was on its own.
It was up against nothing. It was the only movie opening that weekend. Also, taken to the fact that it was 20 years since the original came out, it had been 14 years since any Star Wars movie was in the theater at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when this was before anybody got all pissy about George Lucas meddling with his films. So everything was in place for this, whereas Episode One comes out 7 years after the last Star Wars movie left, and actually 4 years after the last Star Wars movie, if you count Clone Wars when that came out.
Yeah.
You know, if you say last Star Wars movie in the theater, it's only less than 13 years since it was originally released. And it was up against three other movies that were doing, you know, over $20 million that weekend. It's not a one-to-one comparison at all.
Oh, definitely. I would say all those films are considered, I guarantee those studios all consider those films great releases for them.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're very happy with Star Wars. And yeah, it's going to show some sinking numbers this week. And then in the weekend, it'll do well. But mind you, this is going to, it's going to have a final gross of between 45 and 50 million. It's going to probably make the same amount overseas. It probably only costs about less than $20 million to convert this movie, and probably even less than that, because George Lucas probably gave himself one hell of a deal with Skywalker.
Oh, yeah.
with his own, with Industrial Lights and Magic doing it. So, I mean, it's still, it's going to be banking another $90 to $100 million globally. It's still a massive success.
Yeah.
You know?
There's still lots of money being made there.
Yeah. So... And Journey to the Mysterious Island, again, this is another movie that, that they thought it was coming in rather soft. They thought it was going to come in under 20, ended up making $27 million. Did you realize it's made $110 million worldwide already?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a huge movie overseas.
That's extremely surprising. I did not expect, I didn't even expect that to make over $15 million the first week, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I think part of it, I think this is one of those times, even though I usually say this is bollocks, but I do think the star power, quote unquote star power of The Rock, is helping this one along, internationally.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Definitely agree with that. Even though I personally think he needs to stop doing friggin' kids movies and do what he's supposed to be doing, which is kicking the crap out of people.
Well, he's doing Pain in the Game. I'll tell you, you know what's really funny? One thing I thought about when I watched Journey to the Mysterious Island was, I'm like, it's amazing how dry he is in this movie, considering how fucking oily he was in Fast Five. And in this one, they're on a tropical island. They were in Rio de Janeiro. Yes, it's hot there, but this was a tropical freaking island.
Yeah.
So he should have been at least as sweaty.
Oh, yeah.
So what do you think's going to win? What do you think's going to do this weekend?
I think this weekend, I feel like The Vow is going to still take number one.
Yeah.
You know what?
I have to agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The Vow followed by Ghost Rider, followed by Safe House, I think.
See, I think I'd switch those around. I think it's going to be The Vow with like 25 million,
okay.
Safe House with about 20,
and then
Ghost Rider under 20.
So we almost agree on the top three, essentially.
I think this means War is going to make like in the teens.
Yeah, I don't see it doing well, but I see it at least making its money back.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be an absolute. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be like that Lisa Kudrow movie. What was it, Marcy X?
Oh,
came out like 10 years ago.
It's not, I remember, like that.
And then the Secret World of Arrietty is
Arrietty.
Arrietty, did I say it wrong again? See, I knew it. That's going to be a fringe release, anyways. The Studio Ghibli movies don't have a wide appeal in America because they're out there. So
yeah, I hope it does. I hope it does well. I hope it lay well in the context of its release, because I think it's going to be a limited release. I don't see it going into many theaters.
Now it's already in only 1,300 theaters compared to like Ghost Rider 3,000 and This Means War.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll do well in context to.
Yeah,
to the theater releases.
It'll still be a good weekend for movies.
Yeah,
and so there you go. The next, let's move on. We've actually got an email from our good friend and recently new guest host on Fat Guy Second Reel. We've got an email from Steve/Gabe or Gabe/Steve, however you want to say it, because I still don't think he is disclosing his real name. But his question is, in email form, he says, do you find most movie critics are more open-minded to the homosexual community before they become critics, or do they become more tolerant with the occasional gay character scenarios on film? On the opposite side, do you find it hurts the reviewer's point of view if they are homophobic and are sent to review a movie like Beginners? Which, of course, features, if you don't know what that features Christopher Plummer as a guy in his 70s finally coming out of the closet. Finally, is it just too sensitive a subject so those who are homophobic, I'm sorry, he inverted a couple words here. Finally, is it just too sensitive of a subject so those who are homophobic just hide their opinions or views? I want to give you a first crack at this one. What do you think?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, there's been a few films that I have seen, and I don't really consider myself that much of a critic because I don't review that much. But I would say as long as the story for me is well done, I kind of have no issues with anybody in the characters of the movies, and I would say I'm not. I mean, there's some great films that have gay characters. There's some great films that have straight characters. It's all about how it works in the context of the film.
Yeah. I mean, do you find that critics do you find it to be a tender subject among critics, or do you find critics tiptoeing around it?
When you put it in that way, I do find from reading reviews about the Philip Morris film,
I Love You, Philip Morris.
I Love You, Philip Morris films and stuff like that.
Nothing to do with smoking.
Yeah.
Well, cigarettes, that is.
yeah, like films like that, you can definitely tell that in some reviews that people are tiptoeing around the subject and kind of trying to sugarcoat everything so that they kind of don't, so they don't come across leaning either way, whether they're for it or against it or really don't care. It's kind of, you can definitely tell that people tiptoe around that subject when it comes to films.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I find I would have to say that in general, if I've seen homophobia showing up, and using that in a very broad sense, painting using that term homophobia in a very broad sense, because I think you have sort of that schoolyard just obnoxious homophobia where guys walk around and be like, "Oh, you faggot," kind of thing.
Yeah,
there's that, which is inappropriate and wrong. And then there's beating a person to death because they're gay. I mean, or wanting people to really or walking around with the Baptist church with the God's head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fags time. I mean, there's a wide range of homophobia there, and it's all wrong in its own context. But I think it's much easier to bring just that sort of that schoolyard behavior into reality, I guess you could say, by presenting them with realistic scenarios. Whereas I think you're never going to get the congregation of the Westboro Baptist Church to embrace anything homosexual.
Totally.
Yeah, and most of the if to use that term homophobia, most of the or the anti-homosexual or anti-gay language that you see is very much in that context of that sort of schoolyard boistering, or use a better term, Kevin Smith uses it a lot, and he's got a gay brother.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, and he hides behind that sometimes. I think sometimes there are people who are like, so I think Kevin Smith feels protected a little bit to be like, well, I can make dick and fart jokes and talk about Jay and Silent Bob being, you know, potentially homosexual. But I can be like, well, my brother's gay, so I can make these more crass.
Yes,
I can go down these crass roads a little bit more.
Yeah,
I don't find rampant homophobia from film critics. I do think that there's a lot of film critics that are. Well, look, I think that there's anybody who's at all in the public eye, and film critics are of that, who they know it's a tender subject, and it's not that they shy away from it. It's just they're not quite sure how to approach things, so it makes them very nervous writing it.
Yeah. And I can definitely see that, too.
I mean, like, if you got somebody who... I'll give you a great example. I was not a big fan of Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah. It
has nothing to do with the gay themes to it. I just was kind of bored with the movie, and thought it was kind of pointless because I'm like, okay, this is the 70s. Why are you here? if you're having all this problems with being accepted as a homosexual, move to San Francisco, New York, somewhere where there's at least a homosexual community that you can that you can find some acceptance. Why are you staying in the most backwards area of the country in the 70s? You know, and that's I there are parts of it that I'm just like, and it kind of became that South Park joke of gay cowboys eating pudding. If you remember that.
Yeah.
You remember that episode of South Park?
Yeah.
And so then a couple years later, there's the gay cowboy movie that comes out. So I think that there's a lot of critics that are afraid to say, I didn't like whatever movie, Philip Morris or Brokeback Mountain, and are afraid they're going to be criticized. Oh, you didn't like it because you're homophobic.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons to dislike a lot of movies. I don't see a lot of daunting homophobia in critical reviews. I see immature behavior. I see immature language.
Mm-hmm.
I see ignorance, but not in a hateful way. Just more in that, you know. Well, I'm just gonna. You know, well, you know what? I'll give you a great example. And you see this with celebrities who got in trouble. Back in 2008, you had Mickey Rourke. He used the other F word.
Uh-huh.
Right when The Wrestler was either getting, before it came out or whatever, and he got in a lot of trouble for it. I mean, it's the equivalent of the N word. I know that, and just recently, Brett Ratner, I think it damaged a bit of his box office for Tower Heist, when he was going to direct the Oscars, and he said, I think the quote was, he goes, rehearsing is for fags.
Yeah.
Is what he said. I don't necessarily think that Brett Ratner is out there gay bashing people. I just think he's a big fucking idiot.
I think I feel like the thing about that statement that he made, I actually don't even think he meant it in the context he thinks he meant it. It's a terrible word and it should not be used.
Yeah.
But I feel like he just used the word
as an insult.
Yeah, without thinking, okay, people will connect it to this, this, and this. So he was just an idiot.
Again, to reference South Park, there was that episode where the Harley gang came into town and they were calling them, they were using the term fag to them.
Yeah.
And they're the kids are like, well, that doesn't mean homosexual. that means you're an asshole, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people who aren't even aware of that word. It's, you know, they just use that term as, you know, it's like people who say, well, that's retarded.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, you're not actually saying that person's really retarded. You're just saying that's dumb. And like, yeah, and there's that. And plus what Brett Ratner said is ridiculous because, you know, if you actually take it on its literal meaning, it makes no sense. It's just an insult. So, and I'm not defending him. I think Brett Ratner's an idiot.
Yeah, he's a dumb. He's a dumb
and
person.
For not knowing that that's not a word you want to say in public or when you're going to do the Oscars, for Christ's sake. I mean, he's a moron. But I think he falls in that level of, I really don't think Brett Ratner's out there trying to beat up. I don't picture him going out and beating up gay people. I don't picture him wanting the death to homosexuals.
Yeah.
I don't know what his politics are, but you know what? Hell, it's probably a good chance that he's probably pro-gay issues. It's just he's a complete fucking idiot who has a terrible vocabulary.
Yes, exactly.
I don't think there's a whole lot of homophobia in critics, but I think that especially now with it becoming such a hot button issue and politically with the whole gay marriage discussion, I guess you could say, in American politics.
Yeah.
It's really becoming a forefront issue. And once this whole thing gets resolved, which it will, when this all burns out, then sort of like that, the homosexual issues are going to take more of a back seat, but they're right up there right now because that's a hot button issue.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that quite answers the question. So, I hope so. I would imagine there are people that who, you know, if they were to review Beginners and be like, oh my God, there's a gay guy in it. How offensive. But honestly, I don't know. I think it's 2012. I don't know how many people are out there reviewing. I'm sure there are people. There are people who are like that, who'd be like, "Well, I'm not going to watch that because it's got a gay man in it."
Yeah,
but
I think that automatically weeds probably some of the reviewers out, right? is it, I think it would weed the people out that automatically would be offended that there's a film like that out there, that they would probably not go see it to begin with. Yeah. And that kind of weeds them out of being able to review that film anyways.
Well, and I think in general, it's not uncommon to see a gay character in film, in especially even now. It's like back in the 80s, if there was a gay character on film, he was flamboyant and ha 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 and very extremely gay.
Yeah.
But now you've got a lot of, and I always, this is one of the things I always liked about the Will and Grace TV show, is mm-hmm. I respected the fact that they're just like, Will's gay. And he's not this fashionista. I mean, Will's well-dressed and, you know, everything like that.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like, hey, sailor, or anything like that. He was just a guy. He was just a lawyer who happened to be gay. They yep. saved all those jokes for Jack.
Yeah.
But I thought was most groundbreaking about Will and Grace. Not that they had a gay character, because they've had gay characters before.
Yeah.
But that they had a very normal gay character.
Yes.
Yeah. I got a friend who... It's not that he's in the closet or anything. He just doesn't talk about his sexuality mm-hmm. publicly that much. But he's gay. You would never know, because he doesn't fit any of the stereotypes that you'd expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a huge sports fan. He's a dude, you know, all that kind of thing. But yeah. he's gay. And you know, I mean, that's the way people are. You got some people that are very flamboyant. Mm-hmm. And some people that are very normal. And it's you know, I think there's a lot of gay characters that are showing up, and a lot of very normal people that are just happen to be gay characters in films, that it's kind of becoming a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that Christopher Plummer was nominated for an Oscar because he played a gay guy.
Yeah.
I think he was nominated because he's like 187 years old.
and he's a phenomenally great actor.
And it's a great role too.
Yeah, I mean, he did a great job.
He's fantastic, and I do think I think now it's becoming the new black to have a gay character on a TV show. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the latest trend.
Yeah, well, I was going to say a really good example. The same with Will and Grace is Happy Endings,
mm-hmm.
which I watched an interview with the guy that plays the gay character on the show, and the best way he explained it is, like, he's essentially a frat guy. So instead of somebody being like, let's go out and get some girls, he's like, let's go out and get some guys. He's a normal dude. He's a dude that likes sports, likes drinking with his friends. He's essentially a frat guy. He just happens to be gay.
Yeah. And that, you know, what's funny about that, funny you mentioned Happy Endings. I don't actually watch the show, because that's a gay guy, and I can't watch that. No, I'm just
I watch the show a lot. It's one of my favorite shows.
I was watching the show, and what does it follow? Does it follow? Is it follow Modern Family, or does it follow Cougar Town this week? I think it followed Cougar Town this week.
I think it followed Cougar Town. Yeah.
Yeah, because those are the two shows I watched, and I saw the lead-in. So, I always end up catching that first 2 minutes of the show a lot of times, and I remember watching, like, one of our very early episode, and I guess I glommed onto these characters for like 2 minutes before the DVR ran out. And I guess one of them was gay, and I realized one was gay, and I kind of forgot about it, and I kind of just clipped through it. And then there was this episode this last week, and he comes in and he's talking about going on a date. He was on a date.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, and he this, and I'm like, oh yeah, he's gay. I'm just kind of like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's funny that it's that for a while it was irregular to see a normal person who's gay on a TV show or a movie.
And I like the fact that networks aren't making it ridiculous. Cause I complained about Ugly Betty
mm-hmm.
because they're like, oh, isn't it great how much they've done for Hispanics and gays with that? I'm like, they've done nothing. Cause you walk into her house and her dad's in the kitchen. It looks like a fucking Mexican restaurant. There is nothing progressive about that show for Hispanics. Oh, yeah. And the same thing from the gay angle. You had her, Michael Urie, who played the character of Mark St. James. And he was, I'm like, oh wow, that's original. A bitchy gay fashionista.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like Kurt on Glee. I'm like, that's not, there's nothing progressive about Kurt.
Yeah.
Now, Kurt's boyfriend on Glee, you know, hey, it's just a guy, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think, but it's so many, I mean, I couldn't even name all the character, all the shows that have a gay character, or like Brothers and Sisters. I like Brothers and Sisters because they just had a gay couple.
Yeah.
And oh, well, that's the way they were, you know, mm-hmm. Or Mitchell on the character of Mitchell on Modern Family.
Yeah. I was going to say Modern Family is a good example too.
Yeah. And what's funny, the funny thing with that is the guy who plays Mitchell, he's actually gay in real life. The guy who plays Cameron's not.
Yeah.
And if you watch the way the characters have gone, they've really toned Mitchell down a lot.
Yeah.
Even he was never flamboyant to begin with, but they've let the straight guy playing the gay guy just go crazy. Which is a really odd dynamic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it just bothers me when they're just like so obvious. Well, not obvious, but when they just when they have a stereotype. Yeah. It always bothers me seeing any sort of stereotype. Mm-hmm. If you throw a drunken Irishman in there or an Irish cop, it's going to irritate me as much as if you just
throw,
you know, because they have that in Desperate Housewives, has a gay couple on the street, and one of them's a little bit less flamboyant, but the other ones, it's just that big stereotype. And I guess suburgatory does that too. So, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more progressive to just show people as people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully that answers your question, Steve. So you can let me know later. I'm sure you will. Anyways, let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. And this is something that you really have very little input on.
Yeah.
Because as I found out tonight, you haven't seen any of these, really.
I haven't, no.
And these are then five great Studio Ghibli films. For those who don't know what Studio Ghibli is, it's a Japanese studio that does animation, and they've done some fantastic movies, and they've got, what is it, The Secret World of
Arrietty.
Arrietty is out this week. And these are really in no particular order. The first one I'm going to put on is Spirited Away, which I haven't actually seen, but it won the Academy Award when everyone thought like Monsters, Inc. was going to win. I think it won the Academy. Did it win the Academy Award? I can't remember.
Google. Let's
look that up. But what's funny is when I was telling my kids I was going to take them to see Arrietty this week, they were so excited because they love Studio Ghibli, and they started watching all these other Studio Ghibli films, and they're talking about how awesome, yes, it won the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature.
Okay, nice.
and they were so excited to see this that it was just, they were super, it was a big deal for them. So they've told me how much they love Spirited Away, and they've been wanting me to see that. The next one is Porco Rosso, which is about a giant pig creature who is a fighter pilot in World War II, and he's that way because he's been cursed. What I love about Ghibli movies, they're so out there. They're so out there and bizarre. And it's not a fantastic movie, but boy, it's a thought-provoking movie. So that's one to check out. There's also Howl's Moving Castle, which is the, again, a completely bizarre movie. There's always these themes that show up in Miyazaki's film, you know, the journey of a child, and sort of they get secluded from their family and they're going off to a bigger world. And that, you see that a lot in his films, and Howl's Moving Castle's one of them. The next one, again, following these same sort of themes, Ponyo, which you've seen bits and pieces of this, haven't you?
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of Ponyo.
Yeah, it's, oddly enough, I don't know if a lot of people know this, it is actually based on the Hans Christian Andersen story, The Little Mermaid. Which you think, you look at it, compare it to Disney's Little Mermaid, and you'd be like, what? That doesn't look at all like the same. But it's a story of a princess of the sea that goes on to land and decides that she loves, and she becomes human, and decides she, you know, and finds this relationship. And it's a beautiful film. Like I said, completely out there, because it's this weird story of this fish that grows legs and builds this wonderful little relationship with this boy, and it's so adorable. It came out several years ago. It's definitely a great film.
Yeah.
And then the last one, which you have my commission now to go see, is My Neighbor Totoro, which is a story about a girl who moves to the country with her father, and she's sort of alone, and she goes out in the woods, and she finds these woods fairies and creatures that are, again, just bizarre. And it's just a relationship she has with these sort of nature creatures. And Totoro is this giant, this big fat sort of rabbit-looking thing. And, again, these movies are so hard to describe, but they're so beautiful, and they're just so well animated. And they're so touching, and not everything from Ghibli. Some stuff from Ghibli is okay, but pretty much if it's got Miyazaki's name on it, it is a quality flick. So you should go out and check some of these out, especially if you like this, if you like the anime style.
Yeah, that's all I can really stamp of approval is, like, animations are absolutely gorgeous from that studio.
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think that's it. We better move on and go, and we will talk to you guys in the next segment when we do the DVDs. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. If you missed us on the middle segment, you can go back and check us out. We answered a really long-winded answer to a question. A listener. We also talked about box office and whether or not Star Wars was a success or not, and what's going to happen with The Vow, and what is up with This Means War. So we actually had an interesting discussion. We didn't get too crazy. We didn't go too far off the rails. But now we're back on the rails for good. And what time is it now, Ronald?
It's time for the world-famous DVD Roundup.
That's right. I'm going to let you go first because you got a couple from a week or two ago, don't you?
Yeah. My main three are What's Your Number?
Yeah.
Very heralded.
Which was several weeks ago, which yeah. I always thought was kind of... I liked it because of the actors.
Yes. It's a little bit underrated. And A Very Heralded and Kumar, 3D Christmas, and then Moneyball, which is a few weeks back, too.
Oh, you had a slip in Moneyball.
Yeah.
Did you? I said when I first heard that movie, I honest to God thought it was called Monkeyball. And just the idea of a movie called Monkeyball was so awesome to me.
That you got disappointed when you found out the full name.
It couldn't live up to it. Then I'm like, it's just about baseball.
Monkeyball. All right.
If it was like monkeys playing basketball, it would have been the greatest movie ever created. And like they should have given them knives so they could like shiv them in the kidneys while they're doing a dunk or something.
That's awesome.
Because monkeys would be fantastic basketball players if you had actual basketball players on the court that they could climb on.
Yeah, I guess. Just swing or have swings swings through the court.
That would be the I think we have just discovered the greatest sport that could ever happen in the history of the world is it's called monkey ball. And you get basketball players, but they don't have to know how to shoot or dribble or anything like that. They just have to be tall and be able to run. And you have a team of monkeys that climb on top of them and play basketball. I would watch it. I don't watch any sports. I would watch that. I'm sorry. All right, anyways, you also mentioned In Time, didn't you?
Yes, I also, yeah, and In Time is the other one that I will kind of do a quick review of.
I liked In Time as kind of a, sort of like a late night, it's sort of like something you'd run across on cable and you'd be like, oh, that was okay.
Yeah, you know what, actually, I'll start off with In Time.
Well, you don't have a lot of time, so let's...
Yeah, so, okay, well, quickly In Time, quickly my quick review of In Time is the film was not bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. The biggest issue that I have with the In Time film is that Justin Timberlake currently, I feel, can't carry a film, and you needed him to carry that film to make that plot believable.
Okay.
And he just doesn't do it for me. Like, there's something about him explaining how this world works that just makes it unbelievable.
Makes it ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a better actor explaining it, I think you would actually be able to believe the plot of the film.
I think he's a good actor. I just don't think he was well directed in that movie.
That could be it too. I mean, and then again, it is his first go at an action film, But yeah. But currently, I can't really take him seriously as an actor. Okay. Amanda Seyfried is really good in it. But then again, I have a crush on her, so that just might be it.
Well, there you go.
So overall, I would say, I would say rent it, but don't rent it for full price. So wait until it's like $3 to rent the film, because it is worth at least watching. It's just not one of those films you want to blow a lot of money on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Did you have other things to say about Harold and Kumar? Or...
Well, really actually, Harold and Kumar, I really liked. Harold and Kumar is probably one of my favorite comedies of last year.
Okay.
The biggest thing that I like about Harold and Kumar is the first one was really good. The second one I didn't like. Mm-hmm. And the third one, they kind of put themselves in a universe where anything is possible. So everything that they do over the top actually makes sense and can be believable and plausible within that world. Because you have
it's total ridiculousness.
Yeah, you have a world.
We got to move on because we got about a minute 45.
No, yeah, go ahead. So I would say buy Harold and Kumar Christmas.
Okay. The other ones we've got are The Rum Diary. This comes out this week. The Rum Diary with Johnny Depp, which is okay if you like Johnny Depp and Hunter S. Thompson. Take Shelter, which got a lot of note and a lot of buzz. Didn't get anything at the Oscars, I don't think. The All Quiet on the Western Front gets a Blu-ray release on a Blu-ray book from Universal. So you can check that out. Doctor Who, The Doctor, The Widow, and The Wardrobe, which was a Christmas special. And there's also The Lorax, deluxe edition from Warner Brothers, which is the original animated film of The Lorax. And this is great to check out before you go see The Lorax, which comes out in about 3 weeks. The stinker of the week is Human Centipede 2 Full Sequence, because it's just really bad. I would not expect you, although there's a great drinking game up on Film School Rejects if you want to go check that out, because it's the only way you should experience this movie. Review wrap-up, we have Ghost Rider 2, The Spirit of Vengeance, which gets a preemptive suck, The Secret World of
Arrietty,
which also has to get a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it, even though it's probably going to be awesome. And then This Means War, which is totally gets a preemptive suck because... Well, they didn't want me to see this movie. next week, we have Act of Valor, Gone with your girlfriend, Amanda Seyfried, Tyler Perry's Good Deeds without him in a fat suit, and Wanderlust with your other girlfriend, Jennifer Aniston. Thank you so much for coming on the show again, Ronald. Tell us real quick, about 10 seconds, where can you find you?
You can find me at boxofficebuzz1z.com or twitter.com/boxofficebuzz1z.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thank you.